Worn by players like Michael Harris to meet the demand of elite ball players, the New Balance Fuel Cell 4040 V7 is a versatile option. The 4040 V7 is built for the athlete who needs responsiveness and ability to cut and run at their full speed. The model features a fuel cell foam underfoot and a synthetic and mesh upper to provide breathability, comfort, and a snug fit as you round the bases. The fuel cell midsole features nitrogen-infused foam specifically designed to propel athletes forward. Learn more about the 4040 at newbalance.com.
Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
Oh, and first pitch rushing! Deep left field! This is way back! Welcome on!
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, and Chris.
Hey, what's up, everybody? We've got the Home Run Derby on live in the background, and I'm chatting with Chris Welsh. We're going to talk about the MLB draft, which just wrapped up today. It's done, right? We're finished with the MLB draft?
Nope, we got a whole nother day. We got a day three coming up. The 10 rounds are done. I think we got 10 more rounds coming up.
Oh, it's 20 rounds now. I was talking to someone earlier today. There's so much that I have to keep track of that, like, I can't keep track of all the different rule changes. I thought it was 10 rounds now. So it is 20 rounds MLB draft.
They've changed it so many times. It was like 50 rounds a while back. I had a friend who was drafted by the Phillies in like the 48th round like 15 years ago. And then it was 40. And then we went in COVID down to 5. And now we're back to 20. It's just like a roll the dice. And this is what it is per year.
And we've got Chris Welsh here from the In This League podcast at Is It The Welsh on Twitter. If you want to go ahead and, Chris, just let people know where they can find some of your prospect focused stuff, because that's what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah, Prospect One is probably the podcast that most people here would most likely care about. Prospect One podcast, wherever podcasts are. InThisLeague.com is the Patreon where I curate a top 500 dynasty prospect list. I've got an actual dynasty list and then a 500 prospect list, whole bunch of stuff in between. And obviously with this last draft, I am putting together all of the draft prospects that are going to be on it, and the In This League Fantasy Baseball podcast as well, if people want to check out the stuff. I'm on a lot of places, Chris. It's the Chris
you're,
and Chris
you're
show
a
here
busy
today.
Man, you yeah, got a lot a of things man. Going on, a lot of pots on the fire, as they say. And I do have to, we're going to talk about the MLB draft and just kind of, you know, got some high-level questions to start with, and then we'll go through some of the most interesting players that you need to know about, break those guys down. But I do need to start with one high-level question, because it's certainly how I felt, and I need to know, is this the first draft that made you feel ancient in MLB?
Okay, so that's a great question. It's not the first that made me feel ancient, because we've had, like, you know, we've been having some of these guys. I mean, I grew up, not that this was the draft, by the way, but I grew up loving like Vladimir Guerrero Sr. Mm-hmm. And then you get Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Coming in and signing internationally. And we've been starting to have that. But to what your whole point is here is to be like, oh my God, this isn't just like a guy we grew up with when we were really, really younger. It was for, you know, Vlad and Vlad Jr. Again, not the draft, but like, Matt Holliday feels like 5 years ago, I could have thrown a rock and Matt Holliday was still going, and his son was out there.
Matt Holliday hasn't even been eligible for the Hall of Fame yet, I'm pretty sure.
I don't think so. So to your point, like, yeah, I super felt old. I will tell you, not so much the names made me feel old, but looking at Jackson Holliday. You know the thing that happens when you get older?
Yeah.
Like, when you're younger, anybody like 25 or older looks ancient. You're like, ooh, gross. And then as you get older, the youth progressively looks so young, and you see 25-year-olds, and you're like, oh my God, what are you, 11?
That's a child.
This is a child. Jackson Holliday blew my mind, because that is the youngest looking person I've ever seen on any draft room board or anything like that. Drew Jones kind of did as well. But yeah, it's a little bit ancient, especially when like these guys could be our kids. It's a little rough.
Yeah, yeah. Jackson Holliday, Andrew Jones, or Matt Holliday's son, Andrew Jones' son, were the first two picks in this year's MLB draft. And actually, you know, I've wondered, like, the Blue Jays famously have, you know, Kevin Biggio and Bo Bichette and Vladimir Guerrero. I think they had Jeff Conine's son, Griffin Conine, at one point in their organization. Did they have like Mark Grudzelanek's son or someone at, like, they had another,
no, they-
like.
They had somebody else, and now I'm drawing a blank too. They it really seemed to be like a team philosophical thing.
And it makes sense.
You know, these bloodlines pay.
Yeah, these kids grow up in, you know, they've got the genetics going for them, but they also have the environment that they're growing up in. They're growing up with money and access to the best training, and they're just hanging out in baseball clubhouses. I mean, there was a great story that came out I saw about Jackson Holliday when Matt Holliday, I think, was with the Cardinals, and they were talking to some of the guys who were on that team back when Jackson Holliday was like 3 or 4 years old, and the guys were talking about like, yeah, he's gonna be a major leaguer. Like the players were already predicting.
They could already see it. You know what makes me think of what you're saying too, which is really interesting about maybe the valuation. I don't know if you followed this story. You're a Marlins fan, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you might have followed this story. Khalil Watson, who was drafted last year, an insane, crazy talent, busted out early into the season, power, speed, and then everything started to kind of fall apart. Strikeouts were hovering over 40%, and we all really didn't know what to do with it. Well, Khalil Watson had this really unfortunate incident a couple weeks ago where got some bad strike calls, got pissed off, and then he did like a bup-bup with a gun like thing with his bat. Well, the team like sent him home, and you know, they just kind of washed their hands of it, and there was a lot of rumors about him being traded. And most recently, Craig Mish is actually reported, who covers the Marlins extensively and probably the best, had said that the team was sending him to AAA after the All-Star break so he could learn how to be a professional. So I'm just tying this in to say what you're talking about is there is something to obviously talent and pedigree, but the pedigree can lie into these guys that know how to act and know how to be professionals. And that's something that we're seeing more and more than probably any other generation of, you know, third, fourth generation of talent that has grown up around baseball, grown up in the limelight, grown up with guys that have been and can relate into semi-social media and all of that, that there's another range of talent that these guys can have that I don't know if it's ever going to change like how people draft or anything like that. But, you know, this past draft, it's not just Holliday and Drew Jones, Cam Collier, Luke Collier's son, Justin Crawford, Carl Crawford's son was taken in the first round.
I don't know why that one makes me feel older than Jackson Holliday and Andrew Jones.
Doesn't feel like he should have a kid.
Yeah. Carl Crawford feels drafted. Like Andrew Jones was a 90s player to me. You know, Carl Crawford, he was like a mid-2000s player. Like, I don't feel like...
It's like the Matt Holliday one. It's just like the Matt Holliday one. It's like, we're at this point? Like, I'm just waiting. Like, okay, is Ronald Acuna's kid going to be coming up anytime soon? It is very jarring, and it's only going to get worse for guys like you and I.
Yeah. This is, I guess this is growing up, as they say. So, yeah.
Something like that. I have conditioned myself just a tiny bit, though, as I've been covering a lot of, like, rookie ball. I've been out in Arizona for quite a long time, and I get... you know, these 17, 18-year-old guys that were either drafted or come over internationally, that at least I've conditioned myself just a tiny bit to be able to process all of these really young guys and their talent and realize, oh my God, this is a 17-year-old kid that has got $100 million talent that's playing here. That is something we all have to reckon with.
Yeah, I just, the year, the date of birth for Tamar Johnson being June 11th, 2004,
There's some 2005s out there too.
It really makes me feel old. But we'll get to the specific names in a little while when we go over some of your first year player draft rankings. But I want to, you know, kind of ask some other high level questions besides just ones that make us feel old and washed up. So I guess the first one: are there any players in this draft you could see being especially fast risers? You know, potentially making an impact towards the end of this season. We see that every couple of years. You know, I was doing some research, and the last guy to make the leap from the draft to the majors without playing in the minors, a little bit of a weird situation because it was in that 2020 season, but Garrett Crochet came out with the White Sox, didn't play in the minors, was making an impact in their bullpen in the second half of that season. Mike Leake in 2009, didn't debut until 2010, but he didn't play in the minors. So there have been a handful of those, but you kind of have to, you know, obviously, we know you have to be patient when it comes to the MLB draft. Is there anyone in this draft that might be a fast riser? I know this was a very college-heavy draft. I think I saw that 83% of the players drafted in the first 10 rounds were college players, which was the most since 1992, I believe.
Which is interesting because it was lacking a lot of high-end college pitching talent and maybe some questionable middle-round college talent, I think, that was out there as well. That's an interesting question. Ben Joyce out of Tennessee, who famously throws like 105 miles an hour, everybody knows about him. He went to the Angels. I would tell you Ben Joyce, if it was on a team that was going to compete, If the Angels, we really thought, were going to be a competing team, Ben Joyce would help that team tomorrow. They could literally put him in and close. It's kind of hard to give. What argument can you place that a guy that's throwing 105 miles an hour can't immediately help you, even at some point? So Ben Joyce would have been one of those. The two, I don't think there's a guy that is going to jump because there were so many injuries. Another one of those would have actually been a kid that the Diamondbacks drafted, Landon Sims, who big power reliever who started transition to be a starter. I mean, we're talking like full on fastball slider, boom, boom, boom. He would be a closer again if the Diamondbacks were good and he had not had Tommy John surgery. So I don't think there's a guy that pulls a crochet, but the two closest guys that come to mind here, and you know, this one could be up for debate, but Kumar Rocker. I think there's a chance that the Rangers could do what they did with Jack Leiter, and what they did with Jack Leiter, his former Vanderbilt teammate, the year prior, is they didn't let him do anything. Actually, Jack Leiter didn't even stay with the team. I was at Complex all last year, and he was there once. And actually, the one time I was there was during first pitch. I'm standing there with Chris Blessing for Baseball HQ, Eno Saris. We're standing there, and Chris Blessing taps me on the shoulder and says, "Hey, look behind you." And it's Al Leiter with Jack both standing right behind us, just chopping it up, talking. And that was the one time he was there the whole time. So they let him go train at Vanderbilt, and they didn't have him pitch. And then they gave him aggressive assignment this year at AA. I feel like Kumar, it could go one of those two ways. They do the same thing. He doesn't do anything the rest of this year, and then he gets an aggressive assignment. Or they throw him at AA immediately because of the independent league he played in. Yeah. And this could be a guy that back half of next year could come up. And the other one would be Jacob Berry, who I think you mentioned. Craig Mish also talked about him and J.J. Bleday maybe getting some time very shortly here after the break. But that Jacob Berry is another one of those guys that could probably help sooner rather than later. And he's got a lot of like Kyle Schwarber comps in some of the ease of the swing and the way he's just able to like upper trajectory his body, but he doesn't strike out to the same degree, and he's got some good walks. So like those are the two that come to mind. I'd also throw Brooksley and Kevin Parada as players that I wouldn't discount coming up soon, especially Brooksley. I think that's more complete, you know, solid defender, complete bat. He was competing with Zach Neto as the top shortstop, but Brooksley is just so much more polished. So those would be like tier B of players after Kumar and Jacob Berry.
Yeah, Kumar Rocker, you know, famously the Mets signed him, picked him with the 10th overall pick last season, I believe, and didn't sign him, didn't offer him a contract because there were some red flags in the medicals. He ended up having shoulder surgery this offseason and pitched in five games with the Frontier League and was dominant, which is what you would expect from an elite prospect pitching in an independent league, 32 strikeouts in 20 innings. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see because, you know, he really hasn't pitched much since the end of the 2021 college season. So,
well, and his medicals, everybody was kind of saying his medicals still a little bit wonky, not sharing everything. And as I was told before the draft, it was, there's just two camps. It was you absolutely love him and you're comfortable with everything, or you're so out because everything's a mystery and you can only deal with a discount. And what the Rangers did was the Rangers told us their game plan. We're taking him three. We're paying him $5 million, and he is going to be a frontline starter. Had he gone into the later rounds, you could make the arguments because there was a camp of people that said, hey, listen, Kumar Rocker is a great talent, but you got to put him in the bullpen and just let him go immediately because that fastball slider changeup combo can get you some innings or get you a ninth inning right now. But he didn't go to a team that he'd need to do that. I mean, you go three overall with that type of money, with the connection of the Vanderbilts, he is a starter. So that's the thing that might hold him back just a tiny bit. But Kumar and Jacob Berry would be my bet. But I will say this. There's probably a guy or two that we're not even thinking of that was maybe a second or a compensatory round pick that might be floating out there that a team could theoretically push. I don't know if I could pinpoint exactly who it is. There was a there's a kid, Mizoraki, I think, with Milwaukee, who has got, you know, 100 plus and a slider that, you know, that is like Milwaukee's bread and butter. But they don't necessarily push their guys really big. But there's probably a second or third round pitcher that gets pushed a little bit further. But I would bet on Kumar and Jacob Berry.
Okay. Anybody else that we need to know about, you know, maybe for more of a 2023 horizon or, you know, early 2024?
Well, okay, so you definitely need to pay attention, like I said, to Brooksley. That's one. Kevin Parada, you know, I don't know how much we want to go into that later, but, you know, everyone's very concerned, like, oh my gosh, Kevin Parada, what about Francisco Alvarez? And it's like, don't
yeah,
worry about
I guess
it.
I'll ask that question now. Does that matter to you at all?
Like, no.
A team, a player being drafted, like, need, I guess, would be the way you'd put it. Like, the Marlins drafting Barry, a team that really needs offense right now. You know, if you listen to the FBT pod, the Pirates just had, like, a 1.70 ERA among their starters against the Marlins. So, yeah, that offense is really a mess. Or the Mets taking Kevin Parada, already having, you know, arguably the top, you know, one of the top prospects in all of baseball, and Francisco Alvarez, who also plays catcher. I don't think that matters.
No, my argument would actually be kudos to the Mets, because what they did is they took the best available player and they said, screw it. We're not going to worry about need or anything like that, because in like baseball now, you need multiple catchers. You need flexibility with the DH, whether it's NL or AL. You are at a huge advantage. The Giants did this a couple years ago. They took Joey Bart, famously, big bat. And then they took Patrick Bailey, a kid that hasn't come up yet, who is an A-plus defender. And everyone's like, whoa, what's going on? Well, guess what you have now? You got a guy in Bart who you love the bat, who can play some first, can now DH and be your secondary catcher. And then you get your big defensive guy who could be your main catcher. I think this is a situation where Kevin Parada can be the main guy. And Alvarez has been playing a whole bunch of DH. You love the big bat in offense. The side note I would throw in there as well is, this is just hugely, stupidly speculative, but Kevin Parada was highly, highly connected to the Washington Nationals, and many thought he was going to go five to the Nationals. Mm-hmm. If you were putting together a package for Juan Soto, they loved Parada, but Elijah Green fell to their lap, and that's Elijah Green's the type of player you pull up if maybe you're going to unload this organization and you need future superstar talent. You passed on Parada. Well, pretty good tool and piece if you do the Trey Turner rule. You know, you have to probably do him as a player to be named later, that you could move him. That's purely speculative, though, but they took the best player. You need two catchers. That's the way to go moving forward. It really shouldn't mess with anybody. Everyone should be happy as a Mets fan. Parada is such a talent. Steals bases, too. Huge hit tool. Kind of a real Muto light type of guy. It's a great pick. I thought Parada should have gone, you know, really like five or six. And frankly, I think if the Orioles didn't have Adley Rutschman, they would have given serious consideration to a guy like Parada in their organization. But that's maybe like a little bit different. Like, you know, when you have the first overall pick, you can be a little bit more pushy to going with high-end talent when you have a guy like Adley.
Yeah, the other question that you know, something you mentioned earlier about there not being, you know, a ton of high-end college arms in this draft. And one thing that I do wonder, and this is more, you know, we'll get back to the draft specifically, but it's a more high level question that I wanted to ask, because you're so into the prospect stuff. And I do my research, but I can't focus as much on it. And one thing that I've noticed, you know, in some comments reading about top prospect list updates this year is how, you know, I think it was Jared Seidler from Baseball Prospectus kind of said something like, now is where you're seeing the impact of the missed season in the minors in terms of the top prospects, and how, you know, I think Gunnar Henderson is the top prospect on Baseball Prospectus's midseason update, but that they kind of made it seem like it was almost a kind of by default, like he was just the guy that everybody liked enough instead of like the guy that everybody loved. Whereas there are so many prospects in the high minors, or, you know, the guys who you would think of as the top prospects who, because of that lost year of development, is that something that we're seeing? Like, is the prospect pool shallower right now than it would normally be?
That's interesting. So no, I don't necessarily think that's the case, but I actually just was talking about this on Prospect One the other day, that the one thing we are lacking is we are lacking the top end superstar. It's funny, you and I are literally sitting here. I don't mean to look over. Julio Rodriguez is probably going to win this home run derby as we're watching him face Soto live. And we're lacking a Julio Rodriguez right now. The top of the year, you know, you're looking at Julio and Bobby Witt. We don't have, where many, many years it's like one or two top guys, whether it was, hey, it's Wander Franco and Kelnick, or, you know, Cunha and Vlad. We don't have that currently. What we have, though, is instead of these two big top tier and then, all right, a little bit here, and then we just kind of fall off, we just got this big clump of really crazy talented players that are not necessarily at the superstar level, whether it's Gunnar Henderson, Corbin Carroll, who once Riley Green graduates, is going to be my number one insane, insane talent. Whether it's some guys further down like Eli De La Cruz or Jackson Churio, who's coming up, Duelvi Marte. There's this big clump of really talented players who haven't hit the superstar mold. So I actually think there's plenty of depth, but sometimes it feels a little bit kind of like you were saying, it's like, well, this is just the guy right now, because there isn't a defunct, there isn't a unanimous situation. I mean, the same thing happened in the draft. There wasn't a unanimous pitcher across the board. The best high school pitcher had Tommy John surgery, Dylan Lesko, who ended up going to the Padres. The best college pitchers were hurt, and Kumar Rocker was a big question. So this was actually one of the bigger mysteries. Brock Porter, some thought, was going to be the number one pick. He went in the third round today, or fourth round. Third round, I think, today, or fourth, or I can't even remember at this point. Pick 109. So there is confusion across the board, and I think what we're seeing in the actual minor leagues spills over into maybe some of the pitching evaluation, where there's just this big clump of really good guys, but there aren't separators. Yeah. That's the weird thing.
Okay, interesting. Are there any signing risks in this year's class, a la Kumar Rocker? I mean, I know you mentioned some of the top arms are dealing with injuries, so that always introduces a red flag. But is there anyone who was drafted highly who may not sign?
So that's a good question.
And I understand it might be a hard question to answer, because anything can come up on medicals, anything, you know, we don't know. We're not privy to the negotiations yet.
That is the unknown, is if the medicals could obviously change stuff. I don't know. I don't want to say this would be Cam Collier falling, where I think he was thinking he was going to get $5 million, and he's now in the $3.5 million slot range. As long as the Reds are comfortable over slotting, I still don't think he would be a major issue. There could be some high school arms. There could be some guys later. I mean, Brock Porter would have been one. I would say, why even draft him at this point? But the Rangers, who saved $2 million on Kumar Rocker, cut a deal yesterday, and this was like industry known early in the morning. Everybody knew it. And at pick 109, he goes, and he's probably going to get around $3 million. So that risk has gone away. There were a couple other kids. Reggie Crawford was one, who was the last pick in the first round, who he had just made a commitment to Tennessee. Reggie Crawford's super interesting because he's a physical freak. He looks awesome. He's a great talent, great pitcher, two-way player. He did all these pictures with Tennessee. Hey, go Vols, I'm ready. And a little bit question of his signability. He gets drafted. Guy is already tweeting out Photoshop pictures of him in the Giants uniform, and the Giants have said they're going to allow him to be a two-way player. So a couple of the – I had also heard Noah Schultz was a player in the draft that wasn't going to sign, and sure enough, he went 26 overall. So I feel like a lot of the draft slotting has answered the major questions. One I would throw out to you is Judd Fabian is another one. I think he's still a junior. He didn't sign last year with the Red Sox, and he went later again into around a $1 million slot range for the Orioles. And he improved a little bit this year. And I just wonder if, I don't know, if there's maybe some NIL money that could compete with the $1 million. And he just says, hey, man, I'm going to take the biggest risk we've ever seen. I'm going to go back for a third time and try to improve and get my stock up, because it's just not a great slot. But if gun to my head, I would just say, no, I don't think there's no Kumar Rocker situation in this draft, at least in my eyes at this moment.
Was the Kumar Rocker situation a Kumar Rocker situation at this point? Was it known?
No. If you don't remember, one of the craziest things I still think about to this day was someone tweeted this picture of Kumar Rocker in New York under a billboard with the Mets were like, welcome Kumar Rocker. And he was photoshopped in a Mets uniform, and he was so happy. No one had an idea. This was days after the draft. So no, at this moment, last year, there was not a Kumar Rocker situation. It just developed where a couple years ago, if you remember Carter Young, who the Braves took, they hated his medicals and they tried to lowball him, and he was having none of it. And he ended up signing some big deal. I believe it was in Japan. And he's still over there for a couple more years. Those are the shockers that we just don't know about. So I would tell you that's a possibility. Like Dylan Lesko is a kid that needs to not take a dollar under if he doesn't want to, if the Padres tried to shortchange him coming off of Tommy John. But the weird thing is so many pitchers are coming off of injuries, so many. So the expectation has to be in everybody's camp that there are injury risks across the board.
Yeah.
If anything, there's only a couple first round guys that people would be surprised about, which might be like Cade Horton, who went seventh overall to the Cubs out of Oklahoma, maybe Hadjerpe or Gabriel Hughes. Those would be the only ones. Everybody else has had some apparent risk, but I don't think we're going to get any craziness, though. I did speculate. The one I speculated on, now I'm thinking about it, is where the Mets took Jet Williams, well, probably not Jet Williams, but Jet Williams and then the Noah Schultz signing by the White Sox, next year's draft would not be the worst draft to gain an extra pick on. There's massive talent. So look at the Mets. They up their pool. If you can't get a guy to sign for what you want, you say, all right, no big deal. I've got an extra pick in a stacked and loaded draft next year. Would not be shocked if that became a situation, but nothing to anticipate.
Well, especially because their draft slot figures to be a lot lower next season. Exactly. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think like, let's say the White Sox, particularly the White Sox situation, it would still be about what they didn't get this year, which was 26. Mm-hmm. But then if they could have a potential higher pick, Mets, same thing, any of those guys. So usually the compensatory or the compensation they get for not signing is relative to the range of the player mm-hmm. that they did not sign. That's why the Mets had two top 15 yeah. picks this year.
Okay, that's really great stuff. We're going to take a quick break on Fantasy Baseball Today. When we get back, we'll talk some first-year player draft rankings next on Fantasy Baseball Today.
Boom.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
True Green is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, among others. They'll do all of that so you can do literally anything else. You have better things to do with your free time than focus on your lawn care. Let True Green take care of all the hard work it takes to get a great lawn while you take care of everything else on your to-do list. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which gives you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. Think about how hard it is to manage our fantasy baseball teams. You need all the time you can get to put in waiver wire claims, fab bids, send out trades, and set your lineups. You'll have that extra time when True Green is taking care of your lawn. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, guaranteed.
All right, how do you want to handle this? You want to just, you know, go through the top 12 or so, and then we'll kind of talk a little bit about each player, and then, you know, highlight some other players we need to know about?
Sure, we can absolutely do that. I actually think, in my eyes, the top 12 is pretty locked when mm-hmm. I look at this. I do know there's going to be some disagreement. Somebody that I love in the industry, Eric Cross, had put a tweet out for a guy that's right on the fringe for me. He's actually number 13 on my list. He had said Chase DeLauder, who went to the Cleveland Guardians, who at one time was seen as maybe a number one overall pick. Prospects Live had him at number one for many, many months, said Chase DeLauder, no doubt first round, first year player guy. I don't agree. If you're considering into top 12, if you're anything further, okay. If you're into 15, if you're looking at a 15 team roto, guess what? He is in there. But I do have what I feel is a really locked top 12. But you tell me, how do you want to go? You want to go 12 up? You want to start at one?
I think we'll start at one. Let's get the, you know, we'll do the inverted pyramid, the most important players first. And
this is what people want to. People get so mad. We do this sometimes when I do rank episodes. And if I go backwards, people get so angry. They're like, come on, just go at the top.
It's always tough because, like, you want to build that suspense. And, exactly. And I get that. But, like, you know, having been the editor for our department, you know, I have all the stats about how long people click through stories and all this stuff. And, like, even stories that are really sticky, stories that people read, like Scott's top 100 prospects, people just spend like 5 minutes on average on that story, which is crazy. Like, if you know how long people stay on a story on average on any given website, the amount of time people spent on this, but even then, people drop off. You know, you get down to the number 25 player, and all of a sudden it's like 60% of your audience has dropped off. So it's like, you know, you want to build the
time.
Suspense.
I do it too. You lose time. It's like all of a sudden you're back up against it. And you're like, okay, number one, Drew Jones. Let's just, he's a really good player. His dad was good to go. That's it.
So is Drew Jones your number one player?
He is my number one. It's not Jackson Holliday, who did go number one. You know, spoiler alert, Jackson Holliday is not number two for me either. It's Drew Jones, who I think is an incredibly special talent. I've kind of been saying this over the last like 48 hours. I'm having trouble comping exactly if someone's like, hey, who's he like in the minor leagues right now? And I don't really know who I would tell you. Like Corbin Carroll, he's got more power and he is way, way more physically imposing than Corbin Carroll, who's shorter. Jordan Walker, who is a physically imposing guy, he's got the speed. Drew Drones is a much, I think, better defender, I think you would say, in the totality of it, in the defensive side, but he's also a really fast guy. Robert Hassel, who I've got really high. It's another one of those guys who just physically does not compare. Drew Jones just doesn't physically compare with a lot of guys. Maybe Ellie De La Cruz, if you want to take, because a lot of people consider Reds Ellie De La Cruz a guy that is going to be able to maybe physically fill out. This is like an 18-year-old kid who looks like he can easily put on 20, 25 pounds of muscle in the very, very near future, who is a complete five-tool player, hit over 500 in high school this year, and had maybe the most attention of anybody. There's this famous video that Prospects Live had put out where the high school crew in the side of the opposing team is like, overrated.
Yeah, I love that.
And Drew Jones just, boom, rocks it, drops the bat, looks over, and just crosses. And it's one of those moments you absolutely love. I think this is a potentially generational type of talent. It happens to be with my team, so maybe I'm a little bit homeristic. But I will tell you, I'm incredibly aggressive on it. I do, and I would mind everybody, when I rank, I am ranking kind of in like a three-year plus spectrum. I don't put hyper-focus into the now. I'm putting the best talent. And that doesn't mean I have to get a guy that is going to come up in the next year or year and a half, because look at Jackson Churia. Look at Ellie De La Cruz. Those guys are still a decent amount away, and they are exponentially more valuable than anybody could have expected. So I want overall skills, talent, and that's the most important thing. And I've got Drew Jones as a top 15 overall prospect already, and it's a little bit hypey. I understand that, but I really, really do think this talent is through the roof, and that is my number one.
Arizona having, you know, success with Alec Thomas and Corbin Carroll and the development that they've had, you know, that the future outfield there looks pretty promising, and the way they've developed those guys, you know, does make you probably feel a little better about Jones. And, you know, he was, you know, from what I understand, was kind of the consensus top guy for the whole process. And Jackson Holliday was more of a fast riser. Is that why, you know, Jones having that stability, is that why he's the number one guy, or is it just the overall skill set?
Well, I think it's the overall skill set. I think there's a couple things to it. You bring up an interesting thing with the Diamondbacks in general. Something I have personally seen and heard through other people is, look at the guys around him. Corbin Carroll, for example. Corbin Carroll has actually personally worked with multiple players in talking through swings, helping guys like Christian Robinson, we haven't seen in a while, working with Jordan Lawler. He's kind of a coach himself, and he's an amazing talent. It's also a pretty hitter-friendly spot. I think the power is bigger with Drew Jones than a guy like Jackson Holliday, if we're just comparing those two. I think the speed might be more impactful on him. I think it's a little bit quicker. I think there might be a year front on Drew Jones. And I just think he's the next big talent. I wasn't as high on to Jackson Holliday, and I don't have him at number two, because number two comes in, not trying to move it away from it, but whenever you want to get to it, is Tamar Johnson, who that would have been the only player I would have actually been excited about, or still happy and not thrown things across my room and potentially dropped the ball while behind me. Had the Diamondbacks passed on Drew Jones, would have been Tamar Johnson, who I think might have the best hit tool. Carlos Collazo, who I had on my podcast from Baseball America, said he's the best high school hitter that he's ever scouted in his time with Baseball America. He won a home run derby. He's got real in-game power. He's middle infield. He's an insane talent. And I think he could have justifiably gone number one. He doesn't steal, which could be a consideration why someone would maybe want a guy like Jackson Holliday number two in their league. The problem is there's a ton of high school players, and you're going to have to reckon with that. If you care about the now, you are going to sacrifice the high-end talent, because I believe at worst the top four picks should all be high school players. Unless you're in a points league, you could justify Kumar Rocker in that top three. Otherwise, it should be high school bats. And if you're going to go that way, I don't need this. We don't need speed on every single front. Tamar Johnson's bat is one of the safest things in this. Not a big strikeout guy, big power, big contact, four category player. And, you know, he's already, I don't know if you saw this anecdote, Henry Davis, who was the number one pick for them last year, called Tamar after he was drafted And he and Tamar was asked, hey, you know, what did he say? And Henry said, we're going to win a championship together. And he said, we've got to do this. And you've got this rallying happening in the minor leagues. And Tamar can be a leader. And Tamar can be the offensive leader of this team. And he is a clear-cut number two for me. He's inside my top 25 overall prospects. And that's kind of a tier, is Drew and Tamar. And then it opens up a little bit more.
And from everything that I've read, you know, you mentioned earlier kind of the intangible stuff with like Drew Jones and Jackson Holliday and the guys who have been around baseball. But from all that I've read, Tamar Johnson also really seems to knock it out of the park in that regard as well. So, you know, that,
oh yeah,
that's something that we don't talk about as much, but in prospect circles, that really does matter. You know, that's something that teams care about, that, you know, can kind of move guys up or down draft boards. So, you know, that's something with Tamar Johnson as well that stood out in reading about
him. Not phased, too. He's not phased. Yeah. Like, he can just get in on any pitch, can be a leader right now. And, you know, look at the type of players they've been drafting. Nick Gonzalez was a big high bat, not a great defensive player when they drafted mm-hmm. him out of New Mexico State. Clearly going to be a second baseman. They're going to give a chance for Tamar to play shortstop. O'Neill Cruz, destined for the outfield, as much as I know everybody loves their 96-mile-an-hour putouts to first base and how exciting that is, he's going to play in the outfield. And tomorrow's going to be the future shortstop of this team with Nick Gonzalez. It's actually a pretty cool time to be a Pirates fan if you can stomach the minor leagues and you can kind of stomach the wait. Tamar is one of those players. It's really actually interesting that you don't always get this out of these drafts, but like, you have a handful of guys that jump up to be like theoretical number ones or leaders. Like, Drew Jones actually doesn't become the number one with the Diamondbacks. That's Corbin Carroll. Mm-hmm. And I have Jordan Lawler above him. But I'm telling you right now, Drew Jones will be the leader. He will be the face of that organization and the leader. You can already see it. Tamar's going to be the same way. Tamar has jumped in, and he is actually my number one Pirate. And there's a couple of those guys organizational-wide that are going to jump in and have the potential to be the face of the organization. I would love to have a top two pick in first-year player because I want one of those two guys. Won't be disappointed if I have to go in the middle because I actually think the first round is really strong, but this is that top tier with Tamar and Drew.
All right, who's at the top of the third, the next tier?
So the next guys, again, this might surprise people because he was the number one overall pick, and this is where things can open up a little bit. It is still not Jackson Holliday. It's Elijah Green, who at one point was number one on my list. Boy, can this dude hit. I mean, we are talking, and that's why I find it, you're not going to get crazy with it, but I really find it interesting that the Nationals committed to Elijah Green, who there were rumors of maybe some signing stuff that might happen if he fell, because this is a potential guy you build your entire minor leagues organization around. It is a huge, huge power. I think the strikeouts are a little bit of a problem. I would liken him to like a Jordan Lawler. I think he's going to steal a little bit less. I think he makes really good decisions at the plate. He makes big, impactful, like number three, number four in an order type of at bats. And I think he's going to be a 30-plus home run hitter. Really, really good decisions that hopefully the strikeouts are going to pare down a little bit. And I think he's just been completely just overtaken because of guys like Tamar and Jackson Holliday, and people forget about what a great talent he is as he's dominated at the high school level. It's really just been strikeouts that have been of a problem. And I've got Elijah Green with the Nationals at number four. That then follows Jackson Holliday.
Number three, you mean?
I'm sorry, number three. Yeah. And then Jackson Holliday at number four. And I think those two are the next tier because Holliday, again, is a five-tool player. I think is a little bit more raw. I don't think the power is quite there like it is with either of the three guys above him. I think there's solid stolen bases. There's some Bo Bichette in him. But I think Elijah Green's power is 30 homer plus. I think Tamar is a 330 homer plus. And Drew probably at worst is a 25-25 guy. So when I look at a guy like Jackson Holliday, I just don't know where the power is. But number four is a really good spot, even though he's a number one pick. It's similar to like what happened with Henry Davis. Like, you're not taking Henry Davis number one just because he went one. He just falls down a little bit. I just think Jackson Holliday is a little bit further and was such a riser. I mean, I don't want to, these teams know better than me, but if I'm making an investment in fantasy, I want to go with that pedigree on those top three that I've known and I've personally followed a little bit more because I'm not 100% sold on the crazy impact and power of Jackson Holliday at number four yet.
Yeah, I'm reading he broke JT Realmuto's national high school record for hits in a season with 89 Bonkers. In 41 games. That's pretty good. 685 Bonkers. Batting average. That'll play. And Elijah Green, worth noting, his dad was an NFL Pro Bowler. Eric Green, former tight end. So there you go.
With the Steelers.
We're keeping it with the... keeping the pedigree going there. You said, you know, kind of a tier at number one and number two with Drew Jones and Tamar Johnson, Elijah Green and Jackson Holliday, their own tier. How big is this next tier?
This next tier is a lot bigger. It's actually, again, at least in my eyes, the next tier is about six players deep. Okay. And it's kind of a pick your poison on where you want to go. I'll just kind of rattle off the six, not to take up too much crazy time, and then wherever you want to go with it. At number five, I've got Cam Collier, who, again, this is I got five straight high school guys, huge power. It's a Jordan Walker feel to it. One of the youngest guys, he reclassified to get into this draft, ends up still going pretty high. Athletically at third, could potentially stick there. I just think this guy's offensive upside is something you don't want to pass up. And I have him above a barrage of college players, even though I love them. Again, I would pick my poison here. Number six, Kevin Prado with the Mets. Double-digit stolen bases at Georgia Tech this year. 26 homers, I believe it was. Great contact. This is a lockdown catcher. If the Diamondbacks had the fifth pick and had no choice Drew Jones and Tamar Johnson, give me Prada. I would be so happy about him because he's really got a JT Romuto feel as far as like fantasy production, and more catchers are kind of moving to that. You know, you got the bar shows and Will Smith was stealing a little bit. So I really, really like the prospects of him. If you don't want to go with a catcher, you've got a couple middle infielders, Brooks Lee, who ended up going to the Minnesota Twins, really great contact, maybe one of the better college contact hitters in here, has got kind of all fields power. It's just not insanely impactful. At number eight, I've got Jace Young, who ended up going to the Detroit Tigers, who can play second, third, can play all around. His brother, Josh Young, plays with the Rangers. Number nine, I got Jacob Berry, who went to the Marlins. I've talked about him with huge power. And I would throw Kumar Rocker in there again at number 10 with the Texas Rangers. Prior to him being drafted three, he was my number one pitcher in all of fantasy. And I will note that if this were a points league, I would obviously move him up a little bit, Kumar Rocker.
Yeah, and Rocker, you know, like we mentioned earlier, could be a guy who moves fairly quickly. So, you know, that could help him as well. Barry, I'm a Marlins fan, you know, begrudgingly, I suppose. It won't go away. And so
look at us, Marlins and Diamondbacks we're talking on here. Wow, we're the big dogs here.
At least, It would have been nice if the Diamondbacks had gotten that early championship to kind of make the rest of the struggles a little more palatable. Yeah. But, you know, still... The Randy Johnson, Curt Schilling era, that was a lot of fun.
We got one. Yeah, we got 2001. We got our one pennant.
Oh, they did win.
Randy. Yeah, pennant. I forgot 2001. Yeah. And we got Randy. We've had some good times. It's just been lowly for a long time. But, you know, both teams reorganizing. You know, I was a little downish on Barry like months ago. I rewatched a lot of video over the last couple weeks. And I was impressed with, you know, the avoidance of insane strikeouts at the college level. This kid actually went to U of A. He went into the transfer protocol and went over to LSU to go play with the kid that's going to be the number one pick next year. Just FYI, is Dylan Cruz. He'll be the number one pick unanimously. It won't be a question. How this year there's, even though Drew Jones went two, there's no way Dylan Cruz does not go number one overall next year. And it was a packed and loaded team. And Jacob Berry was definitely one of the, the big catalysts as far as it was offensively. I just worry, like, defensively, where does he go? The defense doesn't help him, I think, a whole bunch if his bat struggles a little bit. He can really get under pitches, and I'm worried about pitch recognition at the next level. So I'm not as hyper-aggressive as a lot of people, but he's still a top-10 pick. He still has got massive, massive power, and he connects into it. He did it at the highest level in college baseball, so I wouldn't knock him on that. But, again, that's why I say it's interchangeable. I could see Rocker all the way up to five, even over Collier. I could see, you know, if you want preference and you wanted to go Barry over Young, you're just prioritizing big, more in-game power over maybe a contact hitter who might struggle with some power. So I think these guys are all relatively interchangeable. But, you know, this is where I stick with these guys.
And just for the record, because we do this every time we talk about his brother, Jace Young, J-U-N-G. Just like J-U-N-G. Josh Young for the Texas Rangers third baseman who is not going to play this year, right? He's still recovering from that shoulder surgery.
No, so there's a possibility. One of the pluses, not just of Arizona being around, is I actually live 5 minutes from the Rangers and Royals facility. And during spring training, he was sporting the big cast and his arm was put up. Right before spring training ended, he shed that thing and that was gone. And he started to just get use of arms. I haven't been out to the Rangers in quite some time since then. I'm going to get out there. The expectation, I haven't really heard any new updates, but there was a possibility that he could get ramped up in the near future and he could maybe get in the back of the year. I would say at this point, he's probably destined for the Arizona Fall League. Maybe he gets a little bit of run in September, not in the majors at this point. People thought he could be breaking camp. I don't think that's going to happen. I think he just does some complex league, maybe gets to AAA, plays in the Arizona Fall League, and he potentially could break camp next year.
That's Josh Young of the Texas Rangers. All right, let's go through the last two in that top 12, and I guess this is its own little tier maybe, or maybe there's a, you know, maybe it's a tier that extends into the teens.
There's an argument that it could extend a couple more. Again, like league, the type of league that you play in or the different formats and stuff could maybe alter it. But these are pretty stuck to me. And number 11, the Los Angeles Angels took Zach Neto, who I very much had a late run of falling in love with. He's got a little bit of Royce Lewis in him, a high front leg kick that gets in front and just a real lot of body motion that gets into pitches and can just start crushing. I've said this a million times, so apologies for anybody that's heard it, but one of the funny things that I really like about him, I always like quirky things about pitchers. Jesus Luzardo, who's with the Marlins, I love timing mechanisms. I love how he'll go three different ways, four different ways in a single at bat to pitch. Quick pitch, slow pitch, hold it, normal rotation. I like quirky things. A quirky thing about Neto is if you watch video, I'm telling you, it's a big front leg kick. It's a lot of body motion. And then as soon as two strikes come on, he really tones it down, which is like the physical body representation of a guy choking up on a bat and bringing it up and not, you know, just trying to hit for contact. But he still shows some power to it. And unlike Brooks Lee is without question just a more locked in, better hitter. And, you know, if you want to bank on that, you're golden. But he doesn't steal bases. Neto does. And that's why I kind of comp Neto to maybe a not as loud Royce Lewis. Like Royce Lewis, I think everybody, even though he got hurt, you kind of know what you're in for. You're like, wow, this could be a 2020 player. Neto's a little bit smaller, and there's a possibility he's at maybe best of 15-15. But if they continue to develop him, and the guy has a big personality, Angels are not the best, by the way, at that type of stuff. I'm big on him, and I think the sky's the limit. I'm really hoping to see him out here in the complex league. Did play at a smaller school, so I'm open to there being a possibility that, you know, that could have been a competitional thing, but maybe the Angels can change some of their past woes and how they've been developing players lately, as you see with guys like Joe Adell, Brandon Marsh, but Neto is number 11 for me.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned that with the Angels, and that was, I didn't want to get bogged down in the Marlins of it all, because I'm a pretty fatalistic Marlins fan, and that's an organization that does not necessarily have a strong track record when it comes to the development of their young hitters. So
yeah,
that would be a pitching concern for me.
They do great with pitching. Across the board. Everybody's
throwing these 92-mile-an-hour changeups all of a sudden on the Marlins. So yeah.
Yeah, no, the Angels have always been weird. Out here in the complex, it's not so much as quieted down really since COVID, but pre-COVID, there was kind of a sense where everyone would be like, listen, just don't pay attention to what the Angels are doing. Like, they do weird stuff. They alter guys' there was a time where like they wanted every single hitter to have the same batting stance and like motion, and they just do weird stuff that I'm not sure I really fully understand. That may have cooled down over the last couple of years, so I don't want to speak out of turn or whatever, but the track record of like development from bottom to top is really not great with them. Neto, I'm hoping, is going to be able to break that curse a little bit, but it's a good bat. It's an offensive player. It's an offensive middle infielder who can hit and can steal and has a pretty high graded hit tool. Not a crazy strikeout guy. That's a pretty fun thing to bet on.
Yeah. I was looking at Eric Longenhagen's breakdown of the first round and his, or the first day of the draft, and his strengths for Zach Neto was everything.
Really, I didn't know he liked them like that. Yeah, he was actually one of the big catalysts of kind of being like, yeah, don't pay attention to those couple years ago Angels. Like, you don't want to pay attention to that. He definitely knows.
I like that. He's great. I love reading his stuff. Who's your number 12?
Number 12, we're going back to the Bloodlines, Justin Crawford. We're going with Carl Crawford's son. You're getting back to five tools. I am a sucker for five tools. I'm a sucker for speed. I'm a sucker for being able to hit for some power to attach to that. The problem that he has, and I will tell you this, I think Justin Crawford has the potential to be one of the more divisive first-year player guys right now. Because I think when you start to comp him to his dad, and, you know, good high school stuff, you start to think about the potential. You look at some of the video and you go, all right, this guy's going to hit. There is some power in there. Body, if you look at old video versus how he looked at the draft, you can already see he's growing into his body. He looks like he's getting about the size of his dad. The potential in you is going to overcome you, and it's going to take you over. I think you could see Justin Crawford on some lists as high as 5 this year. The problem is, I think there's a lot of swing and miss. And I think this might be more connected to like a Khalil Watson. Like, I think this might be a little bit closer to that. I had Khalil Watson at like 3 or 4 coming into last year's draft, and the dip kind of concerned me a little bit. And I think Justin Crawford is maybe in that same-ish range that, you know, there's a pretty heavy strikeout issue that is there, and the Phillies are hopefully going to be able to work on it, but he's got all the tools. So again, this is like, hey man, pick your poison. Are you comfortable with a guy? Are you comfortable with Khalil Watson? Can you own him in your system if he's striking out 35%+ of the time, but he's projecting out to be a 2020 player? If you're not, Justin Crawford might not be for you, or just move him down a little bit. If you are and you say, hey, I don't care, you know, give me the couple years. I want the skyrocket talent. And if he gets going, I'm going to win. And he has the potential to be like a top 10 overall prospect. Then I think he goes up. I'm playing it a little bit on both sides. I've got him at the very last pick in the first year player. He could move a tiny bit more, especially if I hope to see him get pushed into complex early. That's another thing. I just hope a lot of these guys, Drew Jones, Tamar Johnson, Elijah Green, Jackson Holiday, Cam Collier, you know, get these high school kids to play complex now so we can start to get a good vibe on it. Mm-hmm. And then we can really refine the first year player. And I'm super selfish because I hope all the guys Arizona based get out here immediately so I can get my eyes on Drew and Jackson Holiday and Collier. I very, very selfishly want to see them immediately.
You know, when you were talking about Justin Crawford and the Khalil Watson comp, one player it did make me think of was Jazz Chisholm, who had, you know, pretty significant swing and miss issues, but it was just the physical profile was so compelling that he sort of overcame all of that and has kind of developed a lot at the major league level compared to, you know, the numbers at the major league level are arguably better than what they were in the minors. So
not even a
really nice bonus.
Total astute on you, because when he was the Diamondback, Jazz is one of the most fun players of all time. One of my favorite moments I personally have in every all the weird stuff that I've done. There's a couple that stand out. It was the championship game at the Arizona Fall League in 2018, I believe that was the year. And I'm on the field. We're doing all the stuff. And we look over, and Jazz had taken a camera from a cameraman. And he went over to the dugout, and he was walking around, and we were like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm changing jobs. I'm going to be a cameraman today. And him and, Lucius Fox, they both took the cameras, and they went over, and and I have a picture, I still have it to this day, of him taking a picture of me on his camera, and I took it of him. His personality is infectious, and he's so hard to not love. But the baseball side of it, he was one of the most crazy pull-heavy players I've ever seen. Every single pitch, he was trying to pull and hit 115 miles per hour. And that missing that nuance always had me really concerned. Could he tap into it? And he has, and he's learned to develop at the major league level. He's still, to me, kind of like a higher upside Javier Baez. You know, there's like massive struggle. He can get into the little, Baez doesn't have the injury stuff, but those streaks. Jazz Chisholm can get into crazy streaks. But his talent is undeniable. And like you said, great call. The guy has learned so much at the major league level. That is what you want from prospects. And that's what you hope that you can predict from so many players. Mm-hmm. It ain't happening with Spencer Torkelson right now. Happened with Julio. You're seeing it with Jazz. That's what you love. And that's a really good call. And that could be something you're going to see with some of the volatility. And maybe Justin Crawford, and like kind of tying it back to the very beginning of what we talked about, man. Bloodlines. What better way to then go talk to your all-star father and Kyle Crawford and have that experience of growing up around baseball to kind of really hone you in and get you through the struggles. So he's a cool talent. He's awesome. I think he might be the most strikeout. Him and Elijah Green are the biggest strikeout concerns you should have in the first year. But there's a lot of fun guys in there, and it's not a bad time to have any pick in the first year player, or if you can get like one or two picks in your dynasty.
All right, let's run through that top 12 again, and then maybe we'll just go through, like, you know, you can name five players outside of this top 12 that you like. But
sure.
We got number one, Drew Jones for Arizona. Number two, Tamar Johnson for Pittsburgh. Elijah Green from Washington. Number three, Jackson Holliday. The number one overall pick is your fourth-ranked player in first-year player draft from Baltimore. Cam Collier from Cincinnati. Kevin Parada for the Mets. Brooks Lee for the Twins. Jace Young from the Tigers. Jacob Berry for the Marlins. Kumar Rocker from Texas. Zach Neto for the Angels and Justin Crawford from the Phillies. Only one pitcher in that top 12. Any pitchers in that, like, kind of next group?
Cade Horton is really close. He's the next guy, Oklahoma pitcher. Was a two-way player at one time. Big fastball, plus, I mean, could be plus-plus slider. I mean, hitting 90 on a slider is the definition of a plus. So he's got that. There's a serviceable curve. Hopefully the Cubs do good stuff. They got some really good young guys. Jordan Wicks is in there. So Horton is in there. And then you've kind of got this barrage that happens just a tiny bit later of, like, again, if you're willing to wait, and Dylan Lesko and Brock Porter is going to screw up dynasty owners so bad this coming year because he went so late. He was 109th pick. And people aren't going to know how to process it, but he wasn't signable to people. He's still in that range. So it's Lesko, him, obviously Connor Hughes. Well, you know, Connor Hughes going to Colorado. I'm sorry, Gabriel Hughes going to Colorado screwed me up a little bit. And I think he was a big talent. And Connor Hadjerpie, that's why I was confusing the two. Hadjerpie is one of those guys going to St. Louis. You talk about a pitching factory. Those would be the main pitchers I would be looking at. That are outside my first-year player. And as far as any other hitters go, you should be on the lookout for Drew Gilbert. Drew Gilbert and Chase DeLauder, maybe the most exciting guys. Houston, the Astros got Drew Gilbert, and Cleveland got Chase DeLauder. Those might be the most fun, fringy first-round players. Drew Gilbert's a little bit shorter, but absolute rocket. There's power, there's speed. Astros have done a pretty good job developing at the minor leagues. So those would be some of those guys. And the last one I want to throw to you, I love Spencer Jones. Spencer Jones out of Vanderbilt, who went to the Yankees in the mid-20s. He's a monster. He gets stupidly comped to Judge because he's 6'7". But this was a crazy, good, athletic two-way player who ended up showing some real power, make really good contact. He's got a bigger zone. I just really like Spencer Jones. And what a destination to go to the Yankees.
All right. That's it. That's the Welsh. That's his top 12 for your first-year player drafts. He's got some other players to consider there. And Chris, why don't you tell folks where else they can find your stuff if they want to see, you know, that full, what was it, top 500 prospects ranking list that you got?
Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, you just follow me on Twitter. Is it the Welsh? It's probably the best way to keep track of it. InThisLeague.com. We've been an independent podcast. In This League has for a long time. That's our Patreon. We do GroupMe rooms to hang out with us. We've got live streams, and I've got my top 500 list, which also is a 400 dynasty. And one of the coolest things I do, which Scott White has taken, has been a part of the last, I think, two times I've done it, is I do this thing called the Prospect 1 ADP, and we draft a ton of drafts, and we create an ADP for prospects, which doesn't really exist. And I get industry guys and I get really smart guys, and we're doing an update. We'll be drafting an update here shortly. So in August, the next update, we'll have a top 200 ADP, which will include the draft guys and just a bunch of stuff. So is it the Welsh and InThisLeague.com. That's the best way to get on track with all of my stuff, if that's what you want to do.
It is the Welsh. And thank you so much for coming on the show, Chris. We'll have you on again soon, I'm sure. And that's going to do it for Fantasy Baseball today. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.